This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Real quick, before we get started, we have something really cool we want to tell you about.
This is our first video ever that's brought to you in part by Wizards of the Coast.
Wizards has given us the cards for Tarkir Dragonstorm ahead of time so that we could get you this podcast a little bit early. So thank you, Wizards, for allowing us to get this podcast out early.
So if you want to get your hands on Tarkir Dragonstorm and some of the cards that we talked about today, use our link in the description below to find a local game store near you.
This podcast was also brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan.
I am a tiny baby.
We are today talking about Tarkir : Dragonstorm, the new set from Wizards of the Coast that we are super excited about. We have some good cards. We have some cards that are close. We're going to talk about all of them and how good they are in CDH. Maybe we're wrong a lot, but we're going to try. We're going to do our best.
No, never been wrong.
Actually,
not once.
I forgot.
We have never been wrong.
I forgot you're right about that. We actually have never been wrong. So
we're
I'm sorry about that.
So frequently that we forget how right we are all the time.
Me saying that we're wrong sometimes was actually the first time that we've ever been wrong.
Every other time
we have been right.
That's correct.
I can't believe that just knocked us down to a 99. 9% accuracy rating.
A lot of these cards from this set are great in casual commander, I think. They're going to be wonderful in casual commander. I'm not sure how many of them we'll see play in CDH, though, but that's what we're going to talk about today.
There's a bunch that I think could make some impacts in some certain decks that we'll get into, so I'm very excited to see what comes
up. But since we're not talking about casual players, if you play Henzi, like I do in casual, there's a bunch that you need to look at. Pay attention to this set closely. There are some awesome Henzi cards, but we'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
Well, let's start off with I think a card that is the most representative of the set.
Okay. Yep.
This is Stormscale Scion.
Nice.
This is 4/2 red for a 4/4 dragon with flying. It says other dragons you control get +1/+1, and it has storm.
Yeah, dude. Number one, the name is great. It's called, what's it called? Stormscale?
Stormscale Scion Dragon. Yeah.
Which is what Mark Rosewater.
Scion. Oh, yeah. So I just typed in dragon.
Stormscale is funny because that's what Mark Rosewater gave the scale to keywords that would basically, like, not never come back, but would, like, they are aware of how powerful they are. It's called the Storm Scale. It measures that basically Storm was for a while a mechanic that would, like, never come back, was, I think, the thought. And it's funny now that it's coming back.
But it is back.
But it's back.
It is back, and it's on a creature.
It's on a creature. So this is my first thought. And again, this one, I don't think this is going to be a stellar 5/5, but it's interesting because cards like Empty the Warrens have been backup plans for Storm decks in 60-card formats for a while. I can't exactly grape shot you, but I can make 14 1/1s, and that should be good over the course of two turns or something like that. I'm wondering if this is going to be something like that, since if you do get your Storm count up to 6 or 7 or 8, all of a sudden you have, like, 9 flying 10/10s or something like that. And, like, that won't win you the game, but it'll put you in, like, a very good situation.
I mean, it might win you the game because games are slowing down so much right now, and no one's playing Toxic Deluge. There's very few Cyclonic Rifts that are out there, so no one's concerned about wiping the board. So if you're able to make a huge board, back in the day, Magda used to play Utvara Hellkite just a way to beat the table down. So this could be something like that if you're in the right deck.
Yeah, on a recent podcast, I talked about a game in which a player presented a bajillion 1/1s on turn 2 and just said, deal with it.
Like, yeah.
And sometimes that will win you the game. Now, this is a little different because it's 6 mana to get down, and it's 6 mana with Storm, so, like, you need to have the mana to be casting a bunch of spells first and then cast this to get a big Storm payoff.
Ooh, and unlike Abdel Idrin, you can't reanimate it because Storm only goes off of cast.
Storm only goes off of cast, yeah. So there are no cute reanimate tricks here that I'm aware of.
Is it an enters trigger?
No, it's when you cast a Storm spell.
The Storm is only that. Okay,
Storm,
sorry,
as the Storm mechanic, is always when
always
you cast, you get all the trigger for Storm, and then the trigger resolves and you get all these copies.
It's not an ability that's on creatures much. So
right,
it doesn't come up very often, yeah. Yeah.
I think we're not very likely to see this in any existing CEDH decks. I don't think it's, like, necessarily a good CEDH payoff just because it requires so much setup to get going. But it is a very cool card, and if you have a Terror of the Peaks.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's certainly the closest that we've gotten to something like this, a backup Storm plan that doesn't necessarily win you the game but gives you a huge advantage. This is the best we've gotten so far, so maybe I'll give it a 2.5. I'm going to give it a 2.5 because Storm is broken. So we're going to be evaluating
shit
wrong.
Is that on the Storm scale?
No, this is just on the Play to Win scale.
No. Is it the Storm scale that you're rating? Are you rating the Storm scale?
No, I'm not rating the Storm scale. I'm still rating the Storm scale Scion, yes.
Yes,
but actually no.
Yes, but also no.
Our scale, we've talked about it before. A 5 is it is a staple. It goes in a lot of decks. A 4 is it. You're going to see it often, maybe not every deck, but a good chunk of them. 3, it's great in one deck. 2, not so good. 1, bad card. 0, not a CDH card.
Exactly, yeah. So I think 2.5 is a pretty good spot for this too, because, again, I'm not sure what existing deck is looking to slot this in, because it doesn't win you the game right away, which is the scary part. Like, there is a lot that other players can do to ignore this as a win condition. However, it's in the metagame right now. It's a little bit better suited, and there could be some sort of a deck that might end up wanting this that I'm just wrong on. So I think 2.5 is okay.
I'm calling this a 1. I think it is too expensive. I don't think it will see CDH play, but I love the card. I think the design is incredible, but I just don't think it's going to do CDH.
That's fair. Is that what's up with the average between 1 and 2.5? Is that 1.75?
There's two instances of 2.5.
Yeah.
Right. So it's 6 divided by 3. So the average is 2.
2. Okay. 2 sounds close to accurate.
Well, I haven't figured that out yet.
My 2.5 was probably very high.
Cameron, just trust me.
The only scene is believing.
It's like Santa Claus.
Well, he's really been the only exception throughout my whole life.
Wait, so you're saying seeing is believing, but this is a podcast about cards where people might just be listening.
It's a video podcast, and I work a hell of a lot harder on the video portion. So I would like to emphasize the video portion
right.
as well.
What's the next card we're talking about?
Next one's really cool. It's Mistrise Village. This is a land that enters the battlefield tapped unless you control a mountain or a forest.
We think this one's pretty good.
I think this is good. What is this one?
I haven't even finished it yet. It taps for blue. I literally said the worst part of the card so far. It taps for blue, and for a blue and tapping it, the next spell you cast this turn can't be countered.
I think this is good.
Overmaster on a land for free?
Any spell. Overmaster is just instant sorcery, I think.
Is it really?
I think, yeah. And yeah, any spell. It's huge. It's not backbreaking. It's not game breaking, but it's going to be very relevant in today's metagame when you need certain spells to resolve, right?
What I really like about this is normally when you see effects like this, it's on like a Vexing for sure.
Yeah.
Where the effect, like to protect a spell with your Veil of Summer, your spell already has to be on the stack, which right. means that everything else you put on the stack is vulnerable and able to be responded to.
Right.
But I really like how this gets around that. This is kind of like a Ranger Captain ability where you test the waters to see if anyone has anything first, and then you know whatever you have to follow it up with is going to get through cleanly.
And what are they going to have, though? It's an activation of a land ability. Like, someone you can say stifle or whatever the effect. No one plays those cards. But like, there's nothing that they're going to be able to do. The next spell is just going to be uncounterable. Now, if you're doing a two-card combo, I'm playing Thassa's Oracle, and the next card, Consultation, they can counter the Consultation, whatever. But if you want to resolve an Ad Nauseam or a Smothering Tithe or a Rhystic Study or something out of Kinnan, I'm sure you're going to talk about this card as reasonable in Kinnan.
Oh, it's going right in. I currently have an island in Kinnan. I am unclear on whether I'm cutting the island or going down another fetch, because there are actually a fair amount of times that I don't have any fetchable targets left in Kinnan, so I think my fetch count is currently too high.
Cut an island, that makes it even worse.
Even worse, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you plan to not play this as your first land. It's not going to be the end of the world if it has to come in tapped, but you want it to come in untapped. The fact that it just taps for blue and can come in untapped is very good. That's kind of like the baseline standard for almost all lands in CDH, unless it does something really fantastic. The way you want to be evaluating this is like, how does this look against Cavern of Souls? Because that's what it's most similar to. Cavern of Souls, of course, is a land that says when you spend mana on a creature of the type that you named, that creature can't be countered. And this is similar. It doesn't care about you spending the mana from this land on that the way Cavern of Souls does, but you can just put this ability on the stack anytime. The next spell you cast this turn can't be countered, and then you cast whatever you want to cast that can't be countered. Now, it can still be Mind Break Trapped. It can still be Remanded. Like, there are still ways to interact with that spell, but it's going to shut off most of the common interaction. And I think for the low, low price of a land, you really want that effect. I think most low color blue decks are going to run this probably just for incidental value, even if they don't have like key combo pieces, which they probably do at CDH, right?
Yeah, your Stella Lees, like any of these Izzet decks, like these two, you don't have to be in three colors, but there's a lot of rug decks that are gaining popularity, like your Loot the Pathfinder Pathfinder. That's just my name. Don't actually loot me. That's a great deck that this could go into.
It's nice that it's also just Counterspell. It's effectively, it costs blue to do this. It's just like I'm holding up Counterspell, except the card that I've wasted on my Counterspell is just a land that I used for mana last turn. I'll use it for next turn.
What do you mean?
It's because just it's, you tap it and a blue.
Yeah.
So it's like Counterspell. It's like,
oh, you mean the spell Counterspell, not a Counterspell.
No, it's the spell Counterspell.
It's like being able to hold up Counterspell for all of the cards that you want to resolve.
More like any of the cards you want to resolve, not all of them, because you can only do it the one time. But it's better than that, obviously, because they can't counter your Counterspell. They can't counter this, you know what I mean? The land.
Just be careful if you're listening to Dylan, because he's making it sound like you can do this after you cast the spell, and he doesn't mean that.
I don't mean it like that. Behaves in like Counterspell in that it's 2-mana protection for your thing. You should do it before you counter your spell, not after to protect it. Yes,
he was speaking
you.
More metaphorically.
It feels like count. It's the similar rate, 2-mana before rather than 2-mana after to Counterspell, except it's more like a Grand Abolisher than a Counterspell, because it's making sure that this thing is resolving.
Yep.
Although just this thing.
Yeah. A singular one. But I feel like it's so close to Thrasios Timna for me too. Like the fact that I'm running so many colorless sources already and so many like Odawara and Besageus that can only tap for one color of mana is the only reason why I'm not sure I want this. But I feel like a 7-mana Seedborn Muse sounds great. A 6-mana Smothering Tide sounds great. Like, there's so many threats that Thrasios Timna plays that people just go, oh, I don't want your Thrasios Timna deck to have that.
Right.
So they just will counter it, while a 5-mana Rhystic Study would still feel so good if I knew that it was going to at least resolve and get me a trigger from someone trying to remove it while it's already in play.
The big mana decks like Thrasios and Kinnan, I think, are going to be the decks that can afford to play this card the most, because, like, you can make 9-mana pretty quickly, so using 2 of it on this is kind of no big deal, right?
Maybe it doesn't take the place of a land slot,
like
then.
A spell.
Like, maybe it takes the place of a spell.
I think it depends on what kind of deck you're in. I think if you're in 2 colors or less, it can just take a land slot. That's what I'm going to be testing in Kinnan for sure. But I think in decks that are like, say, 4 colors especially, it probably has to take a spell slot. But it feels good to go up on lands. I don't know when was the last time you tried it in your Seed Age deck, but like, it kind of does feel good.
It does feel good. Especially
if Thrasios doesn't hate it.
Especially if your lands do other stuff, like, then it's great. The big pull, I think, is going to be how many single color blue based lands can you play in your deck? Like, you can play Odawara or
Minamo.
It's fighting for a slot that is already very, I don't know, feels kind of bad as it is. So I think in certain decks, it'll be more like a spell, and then it's not competing the same way with those, and then just you have less action.
Here's something else. Someone puts a spell on the stack that you really don't want them to be able to protect. You do this before you Force of Will, and now your Force of Will is uncounterable. You are forcing through your protection that way, too.
Yeah, you Dovin's Veto all your spells.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that before.
If you're in a Seedborn Muse, you get to hold that up for every opponent, and they get to assume that you just have
like
more counterspells.
I like this in Thrasios Timna way more than I did before we started this conversation, because that's really interesting.
Especially because crop rotation, every land that's good, you always think this is great with crop rotation, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm giving this card a 5.
It's a five.
Yeah, I think it, I mean, 5 would imply that it's a staple in every deck, and I don't know that it's quite a staple in every deck. There might be world. I don't know that Rog'Sai would want this,
Dylan,
because it's too fast. What you meant? Because
you said 5 would imply it's a staple in every deck, but you also said that things that are maybe CDH or maybe not CDH are like a 1, and then you both gave the Storm Scale Siren.
That one's probably
Storm
closer
scale,
to lower
Scion,
than that.
A 2.5.
Yeah.
So this
is
a 5.
Yeah.
If anything, this is a 5.5.
I think Tyler's
I do agree that it is a CDH staple. It's better than Minamo, and Minamo sees a lot of play.
Yes.
I will say it's better than Minamo, so it's going to go in a chunk of decks. And I think it's going to be a type of card that you'll have to need a reason to have it out, which is why, to me, that's more of like a 4. Realistically, I should have given Storm Scale Scion like a 1 or something. I just really like the card, and I biased, whatever. But this one, I think, is closer to like a 4.5, because you will need a reason to remove it. Other than that, it's going to go in.
I think a lot of the reasons people remove it is because they're playing Marnius Kalgar and not playing Mountains and Forest, and even then, like, you could still play it. It just comes into play tapped.
Then
it's not
bad,
like it has a color identity that prevents it from seeing play in decks that aren't playing red or green.
And before, also, what's the original Besageu, the tapped Besageu that you had to pay 2 life to do something like this?
Besageu who shelters all.
Oh, Besageu who shelters all.
Right. I mess that up every time that I go to type in a Besageu.
And that one was a card that I did play in the past, and then eventually just the tapped colorless source, it was just too bad. So I think it as a tap land, if you have no mountains or forests, I agree, it's not as great there. I think that's why I'll stick with like a 4.5, but I do think it's an all-star CDH card.
Dylan, you're going to make me do math. 4.5 plus 5 plus 5 equals 14.5 divided by 3.
Yeah, 14.5 divided by 3. So the remainder divided by 3 is how much you're off of 5. 0.5 divided by 3, which is... Is it 1167? Like 16666?
Nice.
The answer is 4.83
repeating. 4.83
repeating.
That sounds right to me.
All right.
What is the next card we're talking about?
Lotus Light Dancers. We have no idea what this card does yet, but it looks like it will do something.
Oh.
This is 2, a black, a green, and a blue for a 3/6 zombie bard with lifelink. And when it enters the battlefield, search your library for a black card, a green card, and a blue card. Put those cards into the graveyard and shuffle.
Hey, kids. Do you want to try this at home? Tell your friends that this is what the card does and then ask them how they can win the game on the spot by resolving this card. We think there's a way, but we're not sure.
I'm like sitting there going, Bastus Oracle's a blue card and the reanimation
spell. Dread Return's a black card, but how do you exile your library then? I don't know.
Eternal Witness somehow is in here.
There's something here.
Dryad's Revival is a regrowth.
That regrowth thing from the graveyard. Yeah, for three mana.
This is a creature buried alive with restrictions. But on a creature, it's something I don't know what. I'm going to give it like a 2.
There's
got to
be
two.
A line.
You are nuts. This is better than Stormscale Scion.
You think?
In CDH. Yes. There's a way that this definitely does something. I'm giving this a 3. I'm going to say...
3?
Someone's going to figure out a line that we just have not pieced together mentally.
That's probably true.
There probably is a winning line. It might require more mana than the 5 you cast it for. I think all of our brains are spinning on like, how do you spend the 5 mana for this or cheat it into play and then just win on the spot? And I can't figure it
something
out.
Something with Hermitruid, maybe.
Something with Fate Stitcher, maybe.
Yeah. There's something here.
Yeah, I don't know. Something here. I'm standing by. I'm giving it a 2. It's my ratings, my numbers. I can get what I want.
Yeah, there is a problem, though. I need... Cameron, can you read the rest of the card?
They've attained a level of synchronicity beyond what's possible in a single lifetime.
I thought for sure you would mispronounce synchronicity. I was not prepared for you to get that right.
Sorry, you disappointed.
He looks like he misread it. He's like, oh, I thought that was another word that I was going to... I thought I was mispronouncing it.
Okay. Synchronicity. I thought that's what it was at first.
No, you didn't. You got it right.
So you giving this a 3?
Yeah, I think I'm going to say
I give it
a
2. What do you give it?
I'm going to give it a 2.5 because I don't know what to give it now that you two both said that, so I'm just going to give it a 2.5 and
it's got to be
2.5 in the middle. That sounds great. Okay, let's talk about another card that's based around dragons. This is Draco Genesis. I've been calling this Draco Genius for like a week and a half.
I'm so mad that I told you that it was Genesis ahead of time.
We could have made totally Tyler's said Draco Genius right now.
I don't get upset at all.
What does this card do?
This card is a monster. This is 6/2 red for an enchantment that says you can cast dragons without paying their mana cost.
I have one thing to say about this card is if you're playing the CDH deck Tiamat, this is an awesome card for you, I think, because this is a way for you to then cast Tiamat and then all 5 dragons that you find or whatever, put them all into play. I don't think it sees CDH play outside of that, and I don't know that Tiamat is very good, but it is neat in Tiamat.
But we have to, like, show and tell this into play first,
right? Or like, make 1,000 mana and hard cast it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you got?
How much does Omniscience cost?
Yeah, about the same, probably. I think
it was Zach the other night at Locals who told me this. Omniscience only says you can cast things from your hand, so you can't cast Tiamat for free if you have this. So that's the only reason why this over Omniscience.
Okay. Yeah, I just think it costs too much. Like, it's a cool card, for sure. Like, it is big and splashy, but to me, this feels more like casual, but it is sick and casual for sure.
Yeah, what is this then?
It's a 3 because it goes in Tiamat.
Yeah, but...
But that's how our scale works. It's a 3, so it goes in Tiamat.
What did I just give it to?
You gave Lotus Light Dancers a 2.
Oh, it was worse than that. 1.5 for me.
This is a 1 in my head.
And I give it a 1.5 because I know I'm going to lose to this card at least one time. For sure, I'm going to. I don't know that I'll lose to those other cards, but I know someone's going to be like, hey, I'm going to get you at this.
I'm going to give it a 3 because it goes in one deck that you could play in CEDH. And part of me also feels bad that it's like the one main food chain deck that we forgot in our every food chain deck in CEDH video.
We forgot to talk about Tiamat, yeah.
So I feel a little bit bad about that. So 1.83 repeating is what Draco Genesis is going to get.
What do we have next to talk about today, Cam?
The next card is another card that cares a lot about dragons. It's called Mox Jasper.
Why are there so many dragon things in this set? Is it like in the name or something?
I haven't been keeping up with the lore, so I don't know, but...
This one... Real quick, we can talk about what it does. I don't think this is going to actually be good, but what does it do?
It's a 0 mana legendary artifact that taps to add 1 mana of any color if you control a dragon.
If we get a commander that's a dragon and it's 2 mana, this card's great in that deck. We don't have that now, so I don't think this card is good, but it's a mox, so I wanted to bring it up.
We'll keep our eye on it.
I think there's a world in which, were there Korvold builds that ran Ad Nauseam? Because I feel like maybe those still run this.
Maybe Korvold would try this card out.
Korvold, if you, with Ad Nauseam, if you're somehow playing that in this day and age, it's been a rough time for Korvold. Hang in there.
Do you think Flubs plays this card, even just though you it's don't a free have spell? A dragon? It's just a free spell.
Maybe. I have to take a look at the Flubs decks and see what all of their free spells look like. Some of them are just nothing, right?
No.
Yeah, dude. Have you looked at a Flubs deck? That deck is insane. It only plays zero things.
I know.
The whole deck is Cheerios.
There's 100 Cheerios. Like, you have your choice of Cheerios, and there are all sorts of ones that do almost nothing but something, and I don't think they even have to run Cheerios that do actual nothing.
Yeah, a lot of the Cheerios in that deck, like, are creatures, so they'll synergize with other things in the deck. Like, they'll synergize with Earthcraft or Gaia's Cradle and, like, other things
those
that
are
will
way better.
Help power through. So I don't know that Mox Jasper does much outside of like, oh, maybe you'll get to trigger your Flubs while a Ruth is in play and it'll get you like just help you power through more of your deck.
I think Korvold is the one that makes the most sense as of right now. For me, this is more of a spec of like one day we'll get a good mythic legendary dragon that's 2 mana and it has card advantage. And then this card's awesome when we
I
do
think
that.
So,
right?
So I can't give this a 3 yet.
I think there already is a 2 mana legendary dragon. Isn't
it's
there?
The blue green one, but it sucks. It would have to get a good commander.
We need a good one. That doesn't make that deck CDH.
It makes like dragons cost one less and you can cast dragons from the top of your library.
No. It costs one red and it says you win the game.
That, if it was that, this card's great. Yeah.
Big time.
I give this one another 1.5.
That was Ragavan in Modern 2 years ago.
I'm going to say 2 on this one just because I can also see it being played in Joyra, maybe, sort of.
If it can see playing Joyra, it should see playing Flubs. If it's just a do-nothing artifact, it's the same thing.
They both trigger the commander you cast them
and
do
nothing. It doesn't matter
that
it's legendary. I was thinking it would matter for Joyra that it was legendary.
No,
it's
just an artifact.
All right, maybe 1.5.
We keep naming more decks this card could go in. I'm giving it a 3.
Okay.
I'm giving it a 3. Like, there's so many.
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit more triable than we think. I don't think triable is the right word, but...
Testable?
Testable is closer to a word. Testable, yeah.
So our average rating is a 2, it turns out.
What's the next card we're talking about?
2.16 repeating, technically.
Wait, no. Yeah. Two of us gave it a 1.5, and
he backed his down. He started with 2.
You backed yours down. I put it in as 2. It's
you
too
already
late.
Said
There's
it
nothing
too.
I can do
Can't
about
believe
it.
You gave this card a 2, Tyler.
Wow. Oh, my God.
All right, the next random card we're going to talk about is called Stadium Headliner. This is 1 red mana for a Goblin Warrior that's a 1-1 with Mobilize 1. This ability says whenever this creature attacks, you create a tapped and attacking 1/1 red warrior creature token. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. And for 1 in a red, you can sacrifice this creature to have it deal damage equal to the number of creatures you control to target creature.
I have a question about Mobilize.
I would love to answer your question about Mobilize.
The Mobilized Warrior doesn't have to go at the same opponent that the creature is going at, right?
Correct. It's tapped and attacking. Yeah, so it can go anywhere.
That's pretty good. This is like a lot of the ones that I'm not sure, but Nigila and Timna decks, I feel like this is considerable, especially that this is a warrior that can be found off of Ranger Captain of Eos that can be used as removal. That all feels like good for Nigila. That feels relevant to me. Now, specifically, the token that it makes won't trigger Nigila for an extra token, but it still is another attacking creature that will get you Derevi untaps or something like that.
Can't you stack the triggers so that that one goes first and then Nigila's trigger goes and then sees that it's an attacking warrior?
Nigila cares if the creature was declared an attacker, which this token's not declared as an attacker.
Oh, okay.
I know that.
Okay.
That's how Kalia works, and it's the same thing. If it enters attacking, it wasn't declared as an attacker.
Same thing with Winota then.
Right.
Like when Winota flips something, it's not declared. So if for some reason you played Winota in Nigila,
doesn't
it
help
wouldn't
there.
Care.
But it does help with Timna as just like creating an extra attacker. Hitting still works, but I think it's more of a Nigila consideration.
I do declare.
You like it or not?
What?
You do like it or not?
Oh, it's sick.
Okay, cool.
He was just being Liza Doolittle.
Oh, I missed that. What was that reference? I missed that entirely. Was that from something that I said, or is that just you said that?
No, I think this is just like old Southern white women would like, I do declare things.
Okay.
Just mean like, I don't know, a matter of emphasis or something?
I wasn't sure if that was, you said that because of something that I said.
No,
or that was
he just wants to emphasize that the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain.
Okay.
Right. No,
I don't know.
It's just the only thing that was happening in my head when you were talking about whether something is declared as an attacker.
Declare, that's where it came from. That's I was wondering. Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
Let's declare a rating for this card.
Well, what do you think about it?
I'm not ready to declare a rating for this card. There's an important part that you guys just haven't really mentioned. The removal on it is pretty good for just being on a creature. It's damage equal to the number of creatures you control to target creature. So as long as you control a few creatures, which if you're playing an Angelo or a Timna deck, the spots where this is almost certainly best, you probably have at least a few creatures. So this is capable of killing most creatures that you care about. I would say on average, you're going to look at like things with four toughness, maybe three, and say, I'm going to be able to kill that no problem. So for this to be able to support your primary game plan at one mana, create the extra attacker, and then also later on remove a critical piece, maybe even a stacks piece that's holding you back from winning the game, I think gives it a role at two different points in the game. And for one mana things that like come down early, a lot of times you're like kind of bummed out if you draw them way later in the game and you're already kind of done with this portion of your game plan where you need a bunch of attackers. This still does something, and it still does something relevant just at like a worse rate than a lightning bolt or whatever. And I think that makes it very good because it has flexibility. The same way modal spells are good because they have flexibility, this is awesome for that reason. So I think Timna and Angelo decks are going to want this. My Timna deck personally is probably not running this one, but it's close. It's definitely close. And I'm going to say in general, it's a four.
Yeah, I mentioned this quickly. I just want to reiterate the Ranger Captain of Eos thing. The fact that Ranger Captain can find your removal spell is really good. The same reason why, what was the bird? The clone bird that cost one mana?
Mockingbird.
Because that card now, Ranger Captain, can now find a clone if you need to. It makes Ranger Captain so much better just by this being in your deck. That now your Ranger Captain can find removal? That's great. So
wow. Yeah.
I'm with you. I think this is a four. Maybe some, I could like maybe justify some weird or higher
calm
thing.
Calm down.
4.2.
Oh, here we go.
That's what I'll give it.
Here we go.
Because I think it's really good. 4.222.
I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Only 3.5.
I was going to give it something lower, and then you guys have talked me up to 3.5 just because I think this does hit a lot of those really good points that you guys are saying. I just don't know that it's better than a lot of the other cards that are already in Nigeala. It's tough for it to find slots for more warriors, and like having slower removal that is flexible, admittedly, because the removal's not as efficient. I don't know that it like makes other removal in your deck like not worth playing. So I'm just a little bit less sure about it, but I think 3.5 is still pretty good for
it. I also want to mention that I don't think it's just a Nigeala card. I think the Timna part of it is very real. I do think like there would be a world where like Blue Farm could play this card, and I know, but
then Tyler said that he's not going to put it in his deck, and that was like Mardu Timna is like the home that I see for it. If you're playing professional Facebreaker, like this seems nuts with pro Facebreaker. So if you're not as interested in it, I don't think I'm willing to give it a four. Maybe like Timna Jeska, because they're not all in on a Krark plan, wants it a little bit more. Maybe like Timna Rograk. Maybe a Rograk Timna deck wants it. Maybe it's just because you're playing Krark. Maybe I'll give it that.
Yeah, it's because it's Storm and like this does nothing for the Storm game plan, but also, and very crucially, because I run more single target removal and am likely to be able to copy it than almost any other deck in this Mardu Krark list. So the appeal of the part of it that is removal to me is way lower because I run a ton of high quality removal. So like, because that part is a lot less important, it makes the card overall worse in my deck in particular. But I think a lot of Timna decks will want this, really.
So for me, some Mardu Timna decks specifically, and maybe Nigeala equals 3.5.
I'm also considering that I think this might be a Blue Farm card that I'm not sure about. And I still think Blue Farm Timna Krom is the best deck in the format. And I think Timna Krom might look at this card. Now, Timna Krom is the best deck in the format. It's got a lot of shit to compare it with. But their game plan revolves around like Ranger Captain to get a little value, a little early game value, like using Timna to draw some cards when you need to. So I think this card might see play there. I do want to mention with the Krark, it is kind of interesting that if you want to make sure that your removal doesn't bounce to your hand, this is a way to make sure that your like Krark removal doesn't bounce to your hand. But I would say that is relevant like one out of 100 times. And most of the other times you will set yourself up where you'll make a bunch of mana first so that if your removal fails, it doesn't matter because you can just cast it again.
Yeah, the thing is I want things that are spells that could get copied, and this is not that. So like sometimes you want the thing, the sure thing, and it is nice in that case, but most of the time I don't want the sure thing, and I'm already on Swords to Plowshares, Soul Partition, Snuff Out, Deadly Rollick, Gutshot. There's
a couple more, yeah.
There's a lot of removal in that deck.
I stand by my 4.222.
It's gonna get a 3.9.
Great.
This is my hear me out card of the set. Okay. Is the next one. Hear me out. Beitor Kin T'all is 2WW, a BW, a BW for a 5/7 legendary creature spirit dragon with flying. At the beginning of your end step, if creatures you control have total toughness 10 or greater, draw a card. Then if creatures you control have total toughness 20 or greater, untap each creature you control. Then if creatures you control have total toughness 40 or greater, each opponent loses half their life rounded up. Okay. Hear me out. So the reason why this card is good is because all of these abilities stack with each other. And if you can build a stacks deck that is based around just like building up your board, slamming Beitor, and then killing the table like that, I think this is something that could actually be way better than a lot of the other stacks builds that are currently in this color combination. I'm not trying to advocate that this is a good strategy in the current metagame because stacks is not where it wants to be. But like Plagon was able to put a bunch of creatures that have big butts in its deck and then make Plagon so good. I mean, this isn't going to draw you as many cards, but like if you can make it so that you have like a Seedborn Muse situation for your creatures, you get extra cards to help you find more power and toughness to put into play, more stacks effects to put into play. That's very helpful. And then if you have the Jetmir style super aggressive stacks board, you can really quickly take out the table with the last ability and having creatures with 40 toughness. So I don't think that this is something that is good right now, but I think this is stupid easy to build around with a lot of effects that are super powerful. You can put Timna in this deck and it still adds towards the toughness. It doesn't have to be like a toughness matters commander. It could just still be good stacks pieces that are adding up.
I think there is a great chance that this is a very good card in the four bracket. Like that's what it is to me. Like where you're doing like super high powered almost CDH, but you're not planning on playing into the CDH meta necessarily. Anything that asks you to have an ass party, I want to love it. I do. I still think this is a one in CDH for me.
The one thing that I do like about this specifically is I think it's great if you want to play win con list stacks, which again, I don't know that is a great strategy, but if you were playing Yasharn before, I think this is another card that's great for that because it doesn't require you to play any bad cards. You don't have to play any combo pieces. You can play any stacks piece that you want and you don't have to worry about any of it affecting you because all you're going to want to do is just like play creatures out. So I think that's pretty good. It untapping your potential mana dorks could also be relevant. I agree, overall too slow. I'll probably give it, like a 1.5. Not that Blood Pot is good, but like Blood Pot was always looking for like high-end creatures to just like throw in and like take over the game. I wonder if this is an option for a deck like that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, again, I don't think it's great. I'm giving it a 2 at max, so it's going to end up at a 1.5. Especially in the meta right now, this is not the direction that I want to go. And this is not a commander that we are going to be seeing on the channel anytime soon, but it was just something that got me thinking, like, this is typically something that I am looking for in a CEDH commander.
It also feels like unique design space for Toughness Matters. That part's cool. I like that we're doing more unique design space with Ass.
All right, our next card is Voice of Victory. This is 1WW for a 1/3 creature human bard with Mobilize 2. Remember what Mobilize 1 just was?
2 warriors.
Bump that up.
Double it.
Your opponents can't cast spells during your turn, by the way. That's what this says.
It's a 1/3.
It's a 1/3.
I mean, this is Grand Abolisher. I mean, it's a little bit, it doesn't do as much as Grand Abolisher because Grand Abolisher is artifacts can't sacrifice or whatever, stuff like that.
It's like a cheaper Cutsel, really.
Yeah, it's a cheaper Cutsel. It's easier to cast than both Grand Abolisher and Cutsel, which is nice. It's 3 attackers for Timna, which is nuts. Turn 2 this, turn 3 Timna, attack, getting with 3 different things. Yeah. Like, that's good. This is a Krark.
This will go in my Timna Krark list. And I think a lot of decks are going to instantly slot this in because it's so much easier to cast than Grand Abolisher. I think it is worth talking about the ways in which it is not Grand Abolisher because they matter a bit. Grand Abolisher also has the text, during your turn, your opponents can't activate abilities of artifacts, creatures, or...
Lands, maybe? No, not
no,
lands.
They can activate lands. Because you can still Cephalid Coliseum someone to death through Grand Abolisher.
It's enchantments.
I think it might just be artifacts and creatures.
It is enchantments because I remember specifically going, it's stupid because enchantments like never have activated abilities.
Basically, Survival of the Fittest does. Yeah. But anyway, point being, there are some decks that end up with winning lines through activations. Kinnan is in this boat. Derevi is in this boat. Both of those still have a very hard time winning through activations only, but they can at least do a lot with just activations. And when you're talking about something that is not Grand Abolisher, they will still be able to do that stuff through your Voice of Victory. But for the cost of reducing the number of white pips needed to cast this by fully half, well, reducing it by Reducing it by one less pip. Whatever. This is much easier to cast, and it is definitely going in decks that are running Grand Abolisher. Probably all of them.
Name a deck that's not playing this card, honestly. Because like now the decks that can play Kutzul are playing Kutzul.
And I think the question is like, is this better than Grand Abolisher? Maybe not, but it's you play both. You just play them both. You know what I mean? You're going to put both of them in your deck.
For the same reason that you play Ranger Captain Veos and Silence and all these cards that we keep talking about in the same deck, you're going to put this in too. Right.
And I think this is a type of card that it goes in every deck that could play Grand Abolisher, so that's one chunk of deck. And then it goes in any deck that doesn't play Grand Abolisher,
yes!
Which is like, for some reason, Sisay, the double white is a little bit tricky in five color Sisay, so it sometimes doesn't play Grand Abolisher, sometimes doesn't play Ranger Captain of Eos. Sisay still plays this card also. So I think this card goes in every single white deck. I think it's an auto include. I think it's incredible. It's especially good in decks that care about Timna attacking, Derevi triggers to when they deal combat damage to untap, but I think it's a 5 out of 5. It's just going to go in every single deck.
This is an instant staple. What other formats care about silences so much?
No other form. What do you mean?
This tells me that there's someone in Wizards that's like specifically designing for CEDH.
Yeah. This is also a good casual commander card because casual players hate getting their stuff countered and stuff. And
do they play Grand Abolishers and Myrels and stuff in casual?
Well, when I played Kalia 100 years ago, I did play Grand Abolisher for that reason. I don't know if they still do.
I think some of them do.
Really?
Especially if you're in a little deck.
I do think, out of sensitivity, we might want to have a moment of silence for the last time Myrel is going to be relevant in the 99. Thank you, Myrel. It was great that we had sometimes.
Four mana is too much. But two mana is so great. Yeah, I love this card.
Five out of five.
Right in my Timna Thrasios deck and probably in every white deck that I'll play, which is kind of crazy that we got a card of this power level in this set. That's huge. This is like the second CDH staple that we've gotten, and I think there's like at least one or maybe two more that we're going to get to.
There's another white card that we're going to get to that is a white creature that is also excellent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's really good in Baytor. I can't wait.
Should we talk about that one now?
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Plarian Conqueror. This is 2 and a white for a dragon with flying and activated abilities of artifacts, creatures, and planeswalkers can't be activated, and it's a 3-3.
This is the best dragon in the set.
First of all, it's a 3-3 flyer for 3, which is really pushing the vanilla test.
Just the vanilla envelope is like, whew.
When you're looking for a stacks piece, there's nothing better. This does multiple things. It shuts off multiple things, and it still allows you to connect and like gain your advantage that you would in other ways. The only issue is, what stacks deck is good right now? I don't know.
And what stacks deck could get away with playing both Cursed Totem and Stony Silence?
Normally, you have to choose one or the other, right?
Winota.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
actually just wants this card. My partner is trying out CDH, is very, very new to CDH.
Yeah.
And we have him on Winota because I think that's a really good intro deck where you only have to know your game plan and you're kind of going to just incidentally hit stacks and get to understand when those stacks are effectively stopping other people as you just get some games under your belt. And this is a really good Winota card, I think. It would be better for Winota if it was a human where you could hit it for free off the top, but the non-humans get to attack and then cause triggers.
The evasiveness is nice on the non-human part of it.
The evasiveness is nice, exactly. And for 3 mana, when it does the same thing stapled together as two two mana things that already see play in Null Rod and Cursed Totem, we are very obviously in like definitely CDH playable territory.
Yeah, it's another Archon of Emyria. If you play Archon of Emyria, you probably look to this, but I agree. Like in Winota, my fear is like Winota loves Mother of Runes and Kiki Jiki and stuff like that. Does Winota start shaving on those things? A couple of them? Does Winota go all aggro, hard stacks? I'm not really sure. But I think this card is in the deck that will play it. It's incredible. I just don't think that particular deck is great in the tournament CDH metagame right now. But maybe this is the thing that pushes it. It does a lot.
It's weird because it feels like it should go in Taiyam because of its size and stuff. But like the activated abilities of creatures in Taiyam
is
too important.
Yeah. You shut off way too much
of
your own
stuff. That is Taiyam.
Two Timnas, the Timna Sakashima deck that I made 1,000 years ago, that's just like hard stacks and wins with Thoracle. Like if you're a stacks deck that can still just win with Thassa's Oracle Consultation, you don't care about what this does, you know what I mean?
Did you even have a creature in that deck that had an activated ability or anything?
I think I did have. I had a couple of like the birds that can sacrifice to counter a spell. I was playing those.
That's funny.
And
yeah.
I think those were actually kind of reasonable at the time. So I think this card is a 3, maybe a 3.5. I'll give it because the effect is nutty powerful. I just don't know where it goes. So 3.5.
I'll say 3.5 as well. That sounds right to me.
I'm just gonna stick at a regular 3.
Its biggest thing is that there's a high chance that this either shuts off too many things in your own deck, or your deck is now bad because you can't do anything. All you're doing is playing creatures.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't activate anything.
Except so, Winota, you could just attack people to death.
Exactly.
So.
Unless you're just a Winota aggro deck, which I think we're getting closer and closer to that being viable, of just like, I don't care about winning with Kiki Jiki. I just want to attack with 100 things.
I think that's where Winota is right now.
And that where version of Winota loves
this. The games I've lost to Winota in the last, say, 6 months or so, have all been because Angrath's Marauders or some other damage doubler came down and I just died.
Yeah.
They have not ever been because Kiki Jiki, blah, blah, blah.
Right,
no.
Yeah. That just doesn't come up anymore. Especially without Dockside, they don't have enough mana to, like, reliably make those things happen a lot of the time.
Yes, yeah, so you just replace all of those activated ability, probably like the... You probably keep
Mother
Skrulls.
Runes.
You
yeah.
probably keep Mother of Runes and like the Giver of Runes too. But like anything else with an activated ability, yeah,
just
I think
like
you're right. You just swap
combo.
Out
hard stacks.
Yeah. What about that 1/6 mana 3/3 that makes 3/1/1s and you can sacrifice it to give your stuff indestructible? Do you think you still play that one?
You did play a 6 mana card that did
I've
that?
Seen multiple
yeah, Lena,
people
you
play
mean,
that.
Right?
Yeah, Lena.
No, that's
yeah.
still in.
Yeah, I don't know if you cut that for this. I think if you do put this in, you cut the win condition, but you leave the other ones in.
The good value ones.
Yeah,
all right, that's fair.
I don't know. Maybe you cut the Kiki Jiki or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a Winota player anymore. I only play the deck briefly.
It may not be glamorous, but you are allowed to just kill your opponents to death. Like, that works. It's still works, even in CDH. And
eventually, we'll get enough what is it called? Sarah, the 1-mana 6/6 flyers. We get enough of those
Sarah's
effects. Sarah Ascendance. Get enough of those effects, you actually will be able to.
That's a stretch.
I don't think we're getting more effects than just saying, if you have more than a life total that we imagine will always require you to gain life, and then a format comes around that just doubles the life total. Like, that's not happening.
I mean, I think they could print more cards like that. That's the card's not even good.
Every card that we've tried to get since then has been worded so that it's, if you have 10 life
more than
your starting life total, so I don't think we'll get more.
I'm saying I think we could. I don't think it'd be too powerful is all I'm saying. Just make a card that's really good in Commander. I don't think that's a big deal. That's what I'm saying. But I agree with you that they don't want to do
that. They printed Voice of Victory. They did.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
All right, this card gets a 3.3 repeating. Desperate Measures is our next card. This is a black mana for an instant that gives target creature +1/-1 until end of turn. And when that creature dies under your control this turn, you draw two cards.
I just want to breeze past this one real quick. There were some Rog'Sai lists early on that played the for a black mana sack a creature to draw two cards.
Village Rites,
and I think this is in Rog'Sai better than Village Rites. Now, I don't play Village Rites in Rog'Sai, but I do hate Orcish Bowmasters, so having a little tool that can sometimes kill a Bowmasters or sometimes be a 1-mana instant that draws me two cards, I'm looking at it. I don't think it's good, but I'm looking at it.
We're looking at it. I'm gonna give it a 1 for now, because I don't think it's great. A one shot of a Skull Clamp on something of mine is not great. Skull Clamp's great because it stays around, but this being flexible as also a removal spell, as an Orcish Bowmaster ping on an opponent's thing could also be interesting. I still think it's just a 1 for right now, but an honorable mention.
So I'm putting this at 1.5.
I'm going to give it a 2 just because I like it so much. I also, we didn't say this, it's not as part of the cast as the other one is. So the other one, if they mental misstep, you already sacrificed your Rograk. That sucks. This is resolution of the ability. So
that's
if
true.
You do kill your own Rograk, it's not going to die until the spell resolves. So you're guaranteed to draw those cards. The instant speed aspect of drawing a card, I put Brainstorm in Rog'Sai recently, and the instant speed being able to, in my end step, after I've drawn a whole bunch of cards, great, now I need to Mystical Tutor for Born Upon the Wind and draw that Born Upon the Wind, and I can do that with Brainstorm, which is really nice. So that other aspect of instant speed draw card right now, I think is particularly helpful in those Necropotence end step type wins. I think that can be good because it allows your top deck tutors to be live.
Cool, 1.5 this card gets then. All right, our next card then is Oh boy. Yathan.
Oh boy.
Yathan Tomb Guard.
I think it's Yathan probably, but I will also say I want to say it like Nathan and just be Yathan.
Yathan. That's kind of, yeah.
I think it's Yathan.
Yathan. I'll call it Yathan Tomb Guard. Is 2 and a black for a 2/3 human warrior with menace. And whenever a creature you control with a counter on it deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card and lose a life.
Is this a Taim card?
Yeah, we don't have to spend a lot of time on this one either, but this could be a Taim card if they're interested in trying to draw more cards with their creatures that have counters on them.
It seems like Taim could want something like this. It just turns all of your little things into card draw. That's great. It is only a Taim card specifically because Taim puts a lot of counters on a whole bunch of stuff. The whole deck revolves on everything naturally putting counters on itself, so it's always going to be relevant. This basically in Taim says whenever a creature you control deals damage to a player, draw a card, and you're a creature deck. Like, that's really good. And this has menace. It counts itself too, I think. So it's got evasive, which
it
is great.
It does, yeah.
So yeah, I'll give it a 2.9 because I think it goes in just one deck.
That's literally what I was thinking, a 2.9 because I think it's just going in there.
But I'm not sure it goes
but
in
there. But
I think
Taim players are going to leave us comments that say, I'm not going to play this card.
Yeah. What do you give it?
Why can't you just stick to a
We're following
scale.
The rules of the show format, Tyler.
I made this up. I know where all the little things go.
I know where all the little things
go. I'll give it a 2.5, and I'm giving you guys a 2.
But you're still giving it a 2.5. That's the same as a 2.9.
You might as well just
That's
give it a 2.9.
It's the same thousandth, isn't it?
Oh my God.
I guess 2.5 admits that there are maybe only 10 noxes, but 2.9 admits that there are 100.
Viewer, I need you to understand that I work with data types. Like, I need to know if something is afloat and like has a certain number of digits.
Floating, like mana? Like when you're floating mana?
No, not like that.
No, like a rupier.
Oh, rupier float. That's your favorite type of float.
Ooh, I'm hungry now. All right, let's talk about Zergo Stormrender. This is a red. Okay, I'm going to delete it.
No, we can. I don't think this. I'm not sure about this one.
I just deleted it.
We were back and forth so much on is this card actually good or not.
No, I think we should talk about it.
You want to talk about it?
Yes, I want to talk about
this. Okay, all right. Tyler wants to talk about it.
You have to read it now.
Are you going
to
say it's bad?
So this one is Zergo Stormrender, which costs exactly Mardu. It's a legendary creature, Orc Warrior. So this card has Mobilize 1. We talked about Mobilize before. It creates the temporary 1-1 warrior that's tapped and attacking. And it also has the text, whenever a creature token you control leaves the battlefield, draw a card if it was attacking. Otherwise, each opponent loses one life. He's a 3-3. There's a combo that was just brought to my attention by Kev and Tim, I guess we're fooling around with Brea of all things.
Four color Brea.
And there's a combo with Warren Soul Trader, and there's a creature
Tim loves. Warren Soul Trader.
I know, he does. Warren Soul Trader plus a 3-mana artifact creature that says whenever you create a token, you also make a 1/1 Thopter. So in Warren Soul Trader, if you can sack one thing, you make a treasure token, which tells you to then make a Thopter, and then you can sacrifice that Thopter to make another treasure token, make another Thopter. This loop results in you sacrificing a token each time, so that would cause each opponent to lose one life each time with this guy. So if you can find a way to make yourself not go life negative, or if you're way ahead on life total, you can kill your opponents dead if you assemble this 3-card combo. Now, I think it basically requires this dude to be in the command zone to do that. Like, there's not a world in which this is enough incidental value that you're running him in the 99.
If it's your third card of that combo to be in your 99, I don't like it. But can I ask you this, Tyler?
Yeah.
Are you going to play this in Krok Timna? Because if you Twin Flame a bunch of your stuff and, like, can basically infinitely Twin Flame, then when they sacrifice at the end step, then this thing triggers and you can kill the table like that.
If I can infinitely Twin Flame and I'm not already winning the game, there's a huge issue.
This allows your Nigilus, your opponents, to either make the decision, do I let all this damage get through and just have more warriors forever, or do I give Nigilus a bunch of cards? My big issue is Nigilus already has so many 3-drop warriors that are really fighting for that spot, as well as Nigilus herself is 3-mana, and then you got the Squirrel, and then you got the Samud, and then, like, how many of that can you do? So that's why I wanted to get rid of this card, but it says draw card, it's a combo piece, it's a legend, it's a warrior, it's got words that we're looking for.
I think this most likely is just, like, a fringe commander that is, like, close to CEDH, or maybe is, like, CEDH, but, like, low tier. But I think it has the potential to be that. I'd be really interested to see if anyone ends up finding the way to, like, really crack this and find other combos that work with that to drain your opponents to death. So I'm going to say this is a 2.5. It's almost a 3 for me, maybe.
Yeah. 2.4 for me.
I'm going with a 1.5.
1.5, yeah.
I'll admit, I wasn't very privy to that combo before, but I don't think I'm too impressed that I have to play a bunch of bad cards to make it work.
It's more of the fact that it's draw and combo, and then if you can make the other combo pieces, like the cards that you mentioned mentioned were kind of baddish, but if you can find like a version of one of those that's not so baddish, then it gets a little closer to like, yes, it's a three card combo, but you want to play those cards anyway. And this is also card draw. So like a little bit of all of the worlds is good.
How many does it mobilize for?
It mobilizes for one. I don't think its own mobilized creature tokens are what you care about. Like there's other combos here that are obvious but inefficient. Like if you like Kiki-Jiki a combat celebrant and you have infinite combat celebrants and then have a way to sack them, you can just draw your entire deck.
You could just win with infinite combat
celebrants. Just go to your end step.
One more thing that I should have said before. The Abdul Adrian loop with Animate Dead, if you have a sack outlet, like this, that also just converts that into a win. There's all these existing combos that this like kind of plays nice with, kind of can convert into a win, and like maybe the sum of those is enough to make this a CDH deck. I'm just not sure.
Comparable to Mayhem Devil real quick, Tim Natana, when I was playing Blood Pot, I played Mayhem Devil. One's because it can help ping off the table into stacks, but also if I need to draw the cards first with Timna and then I want to go for my Kiki line in my second main phase, Mayhem Devil means that when I go to my end step and the Kiki token sacrifice, I can still ping off the table. So you can go through the Kiki loop in your main two if you can get the Mayhem Devil out. And normally with Birthing Pod, you can do that. You can get the Mayhem Devil out in the same turn. So for that reason, I think it's also comparable to that. So it's like a Mayhem Devil that instead of controls the board, maybe draws you some cards.
I don't know. I would rather play Beitor in the command zone than play this card. So I'm sticking at my 1.5, I think. Yeah. 2.13 repeating is what New Zergo will end up getting then.
Cool.
Our next card is Nature's Rhythm.
This is a card. This is a getting card. Oh, boy. Yeah.
This is X and 2 green for a sorcery that lets you search your library for a creature card with mana value X or less and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle. And you can harmonize this card for X and 4 green, which means that you may cast this card from your graveyard for its harmonized cost, and you may tap a creature you control to reduce that cost by an amount of generic mana equal to its power. Exile the spell. This harmonizability is significantly worse than I thought it was.
Not Convoke, it's one creature.
Up to 20 seconds ago, yeah. I thought it was more like I can just tap like a bunch of my creatures and like kind of help pay for a bunch. But no, I can tap Timna and
one
get
creature
and have that amount for two generic mana.
I'll let you talk about this first because green tutor for Kinnan.
In most decks, like this is competing with Finale of Devastation, still better. Invasion of Ikoria, probably still better. Searches your graveyard as well, whereas this only searches you.
The Ikoria card only does your deck, and you can only get non-humans from it too.
The Invasion of Ikoria?
The Invasion of Ikoria, yeah.
It searches your graveyard, you're mistaken.
Well, it can only get non-humans anyway, which makes me think this is just
non-human,
strictly better.
Sure. So There may be some decks that are really interested in tutoring humans where this is going to be better than Invasion of Ikoria because of the flexibility to be able to get human creatures. I think being able to search your graveyard also in CDH matters a lot because it means that you can execute the same loops regardless of where things are, whether they're in the graveyard or the library or whatever. For my Kinnan list personally, I'm pretty sure this is just going to take the slot of Green Sun Zenith immediately. Green Sun Zenith can only find a green creature. That flexibility really hurts sometimes. I will miss being able to spend 4 mana to go find Enduring Vitality, but for 5 mana, having the flexibility to then find anything else that I need at other times in the game, be able to find blue creatures, is really good. Being able to cast this from the graveyard by singing a tune with your opponent and making sure that you... Is that how Harmonize works?
Harmonize, yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah. You just have to sing with your opponents and be in key. That is really sweet.
Can your opponents counter the Harmonize if they sing out of key?
Oh.
Harmonize is casting the spell or is it an activated ability?
No, you cast this card again. Yeah.
Okay. All the things you said I think are true. I think the big thing that's difference between this and Ikoria is the human part of it. Because this can find anything and not being able to find Grand Abolisher or whatever can be kind of relevant and limiting. And also the second part, like this is two tutors if you have enough mana. Two tutors for creatures. A lot of decks can just win from that. Now you have to have a billion mana, but I don't think that's outlandish to think that like Kinnan could just like hard cast both modes of this on the same turn. And that could be really good, right?
Well, yeah, I'm specifically looking forward to the play pattern of you cast this for X equals 3 initially, get Enduring Vitality, which opens up like, I mean, if you have 4 creatures on board, you can be opening up 8 mana for yourself and Kinnan, and then you just immediately recast this.
I agree that Finale of Devastation is better because Finale is also a win condition that you can put a billion into and pump your team, but I do think that it's better than Invasion of Ikoria, but it's close. I think it's about the same. The graveyard aspect, the flipping of Ikoria, those are relevant good parts. Tutors rather than one is like a huge, I'd much rather a second tutor than an 8-8, you know what I mean?
Still not better than Court of Calling, we didn't mention that either, but Court of Calling is still better
instant
because
speed
it's instant.
Is, yeah.
Courting for a Thassa's Oracle and having Tainted Pact in my hand is like my favorite way to win in most games. I think this is a 5 out of 5.
I'll give it a 4.9. We've given two other cards a 5,
yeah.
Right?
And I have, no, we haven't. One
I
of
gave
them,
the land a 4.9.
Yeah, so the land's not going to end up at a 5.
I can't stand you.
I know, I was mad about it too. For that, I want to give this a 4 now.
No, realistically, yeah. I mean, I guess I could see that you don't think this goes in every green deck.
Yeah, I give this a 4.9. I think it is not the best of its class, of its category. I just think it's up there, definitely in contention, and in decks that run a lot of creature tutors, it's going in.
Yeah, I'm at a point where I think that it's in the same category as that land, and that I need a good reason to not play it. I gave that one a 4.9. I should probably give this one a 4.9, too. I just think this card is like a clearly very powerful CEDH card. I want to emphasize that. But yeah, maybe I give it a 4.9 technically.
I'm sorry. I want to raise my rating to 4.95 because I just realized that it has Rhythm and Harmonize on the same card.
Dylan, what did you give it? A 5? You're giving it a 5?
I guess I give it a 4.9.
I'm also going to give this a 4.5.
It's going to be a great CDH card nonetheless.
Yeah, if there's like one specific creature that you really want in your deck out, like a Treasonous Ogre or something like that, I think this card's going to be...
What green deck wouldn't play this card? Name one. Name a green deck that doesn't want this.
Thrasios Timna.
I'll play this in Thrasios Timna. No,
oh, really? You will?
Yeah.
I'm only playing Finale of Devastation because it's also a combo piece. Like, it's also an infinite mana finisher.
We just put Green Sun Zenith
in. To say kind of with, like, the five-color decks aren't going to run this, I don't think.
You don't think Najeela would want another way to find Derevi that can then find a second combo piece afterwards? I don't know. I think that might. I like the play pattern of the first one finds Seedborn Muse, and then I guess, like, theoretically, I'm thinking, like, you untap, and then you can find whatever other combo piece you need because you've made a bunch of mana. So, like, it allows your Seedborn Muse to definitely close when it gets back to you, or even just, like, Seedborn once, and then with Valley Floodcaller on someone's turn now, I can flash this back from my end step because it doesn't say anything about sorcery speed when you harmonize it, right? You can instant speed it if you were to have a Valley Floodcaller out. So, yeah, I think it's a Timna Thrasios card. Maybe I could see an argument for some of the five color decks not wanting it, but I think this is, yeah, I don't know. I think it's gonna go in like just about every deck.
There's some green decks that don't play Invasion of Ikoria. So if there's green decks that don't play Invasion, I think there's reasons for them to not play Nature's Rhythm.
The main reason is just they'll need to find humans sometimes. Like in Timna Thrasios, I want my tutors to be able to find either a Grand Abolisher or a win condition. That's why the flexibility of the green tutors is good, because they can find the protection or they can find the win. Whereas the thing that we just said, the Ikoria, it can't really do that as well. It can find Kutzel. It can find, you know, some other form of protection. This is another thing. Can find the non-humans and stuff. But the graveyard is also relevant. That's true. To be able to find something for a graveyard, just to me, less relevant.
I'm sticking with my 4.5. It's okay. Going to get a 4.65. We have one card that's going to come from the commander set, and that's Will of the Jeskai.
One card besides the commanders, because there are two, I think, commanders that are from the commander set that we'll talk about, but
great
yes.
Great point. Okay. This is 3 and a red for a sorcery that says choose one. If you control a commander as you cast a spell, you may choose both instead. Each player may discard their hand and draw 5 cards, and or each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn, and the flashback cost is equal to its mana cost. Kind of weird that it doesn't give them harmonize in the set that has harmonize, right?
It gives them flashback?
It gives them flashback specifically.
I think it's flavor reasons.
Because it's from the commander set where they're allowed to do other mechanics in the commander set because it's not part of the main standard set. That's why.
I guess that makes sense.
And harmonize would be way worse. This one is cool. I think it's neat. 4 mana is a little bit steep for the effect. 5 cards is like a lot less than 7 cards. Which normally a wheel would get you, but the added bonus, if you have your commander out, which any deck that's going to play this would, that you get a weird, not a Yawgmoth's wheel.
Cast in Flames.
Cast in Flames is what it really is, because it's only instants and sorceries. If you're playing heavy red rituals, I'm thinking about it in Rog'Sai. It's just like, this can go a lot of ways. I'm interested to if you think this is any good in a Krark deck.
I'm thinking about it. 4 is a lot.
4 is
like,
a lot.
4 really
right?
is a yeah. lot, but it's a very powerful effect. The Krark deck that I'm playing is currently on Underworld Breach, but not Grinding Station or LED. Like, no Underworld Breach lines. It's just kind of like incidental value Underworld Breach to be able to replay your spells and stuff. And there might be a world in which this can just do the same thing, but also is a sorcery that Krark can copy and will churn you through your deck. I'm not sure, but I might give it a try. It's definitely a lot of relevant text.
Yeah, I'm going to try it in Rog'Sai. I think it's better than Wheel of Misfortune, and I don't play Wheel of Misfortune anymore, but I am kind of looking. I have like a flex spot of like a gas slot that I could play. I'm not playing Bolas's Citadel. I'm currently trying out Stock Up, which actually has been kind of neat and good. This is 4 mana rather than 3, which is huge, but I think I could look at this as another gas card, and sometimes this one's just going to win the game. If you got a full graveyard and you can recast a couple tutors, this is just going to win you the game, and you don't even need to give your opponents a wheel. This is Past in Flames that you didn't normally want to play because Past in Flames is a little bit too expensive for CDH, but having it on the back of a little wheel That feels good.
And
feels
anything good that you discard to the first ability, you can still use if it's an instant or sorcery with the second ability because of how these stack.
And you can also, like, you reuse your rituals. If I use the Jessica's Will to cast this, and then I cast this, this can now help me recast the Jessica's Will out of the graveyard, which is
that's
huge.
That's so many cards you would get to see. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's, like, really good with other cards that are good, really good with red rituals. Just important to note that it only casts instant and sorceries from the graveyards.
Its mana cost is what holds it back, but they couldn't have made this three mana without it busting
it would be
wide. Open,
it would be
yeah.
a 5 out of 5, I think. If
it would
it was
be
three,
a 5 out of 5
like
if it was 3.
Difference.
Weirdly enough, like that one more mana yeah, just right? kind of, I think, makes this a 3, maybe?
I think I'm giving it a 3, too, but I think it's good.
I'm giving this a 3.5.
I'll give it a 3.5, too. If Tyler thinks it's good, I think it's good.
Well, then I'm going to give it a 3.5.
I'll give it a 3.6.
I'll give it a 3.55.
I'm going to give it a 99. Nah, we're giving it a 3.5.
Yeah,
this
3.5
card does seem
right.
really good. I feel like it needs a bit of a niche home.
Should we talk about the commanders that we're playing in the upcoming video that we haven't played yet?
We have finally made it to this point of the podcast. We're going to rate the commanders that we're playing for the episode. Our first one is Yureni of the Unwritten. This is for a green, a blue, and a red for a legendary spirit dragon that's a 7/7 with flying and trample. And when it enters or attacks, look at the top 8 cards of your library. You may put a dragon creature card from among them onto the battlefield. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. I have a question.
Give it to me.
So we went from saying the names of the cards and the abilities to saying this creature or this card,
yep.
back to saying the names of things and their abilities.
Well, I guess, yeah.
When Yureni enters the battlefield or attacks, it doesn't say when this card enters or attacks.
I thought we did have to go back to that.
Why are we back to this templating?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe because Commander?
I don't think this is the first card that I read today that's like this, though.
Don't forget, the order in which sets are released is not necessarily the order in which they were designed, and design is what, like, they say a 2-year lead time or something?
But other cards have already come out that do that.
Yeah, I'm still confused.
This is a Food Chain Commander. Do this over and over again. Find Terror of Peaks with Food Chain. You have Food Chain out. You have your Squealoop. You make a billion mana. You cast this. You look for a Terror of the Peaks. Oh, it's not there. Do it again. And you find Terror of the Peaks.
Oh, there's Terror of the Peaks.
Cast Terror of Peaks. Then you keep on doing your loop. That's a Food Chain deck.
We'll play it on the channel.
We thought for a second. I'm like, what if this is like a Kinnan? It enters or attacks. If you put like 10 to 15 reasonable 4-mana, 5-mana dragons that do something in your deck, and every time you're like, well, that's another thing. It goes into play, I think, right?
It does, but the next question was, name 10 reasonable dragons
yeah,
you can play.
Yeah, and that's the issue, right? Like, what do you play? So I think probably the better deck would just be Team or Food Chain, but you play a Terror of the Peaks, and you have a big haymaker in your command zone, okay? But if you added in a couple dragons and set it up in a way that you could get some value off of it, that would be a crazy bracket 4 deck.
Yeah, that's what this deck does, and what do we want to rate it?
It's a 2.5. It'll be a 2.5. It can win. It'll be able to win. It's a Teamer Food Chain strategy that will be able to win.
I like 2.5.
The next card we're going to talk about is Tavall, the Balanced Scale. This is 1, a black, a green, and a blue for a 4/4 legendary creature spirit dragon with flying. When it doesn't say it. It says whenever Tavall attacks, you mill 3 cards, and then you may return a land card from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. And whenever one or more cards leave your graveyard, you can create a 2/2 black zombie druid creature token.
If you have Gravecrawler and Phyrexian Altar, that is a 4-mana, 2-card infinite combo with your commander. So kind of 8-mana because you have to play your commander first, and you have to have a zombie in play that you can cast the Gravecrawler to start your loop, but you can cast the Gravecrawler, sack it to make a mana. If you can cast it from your graveyard, you'll trigger this guy to make a zombie. Since there's a zombie in play, you can cast your Gravecrawler from the command zone. You do this over and over again, you make a billion 2/2s, and then you can sack them for a billion mana. What do you do then? I don't know.
Finale of Devastation.
Finale of Devastation or something. That's the thought. Make a billion 2/2s and maybe that's enough. That's what I'm thinking with this one.
I love this. I love that it's basically like, what if Soul of Windgrace was Sultai? Like, it's yeah. just kind of doing that. I'm just like a sucker for like incrementally put lands on the battlefield. Yeah. Like, I love that kind of like, eventually you're going to win strategy. I just think this is a really cool card. I'm not sure it's that strong in CDH, but I still want to give it a 2.5 because I just really like the effect and it's a reasonable cost and all those reasons.
This is the Tormod with partner. Tormod does the same zombie thing. Whenever something leaves the graveyard, you make a zombie or something.
Oh, I wanted to say something else too. I don't know why it gets me so much, but there is another card in this set that uses the 2/2 black zombie druid templating. It's got to be my favorite card in like a year or two at least. And it's not a CDH card, but I just think it is so cool. The Sibsig Ceremony. And I think this is just the freaking coolest card. Something about it, like about the art and like the flavor of it, is just freaking awesome. I am in love with the Sibsig Ceremony. Great job.
What do we want to give Tavall then?
What do we give the other one?
2.5.
I think. Yeah, 2.5. I think it's a little bit worse though, because you still need something to do with all those zombies, so I'll give it a 2.2. But it's also a Sultai deck, which is better than Temur, because you get to play Consultation and stuff.
So we're back up to 2.5.
2.5 it is.
The next card then is Shiko, Paragon of the Way. This is 2, a blue, a red, and a white for a 4-5 legendary creature Spirit Dragon with Flying and Vigilance. And when it enters, exile target non-land card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard. Copy it, then you may cast that copy without paying its mana cost.
You know what I love? When I look at a card and the first thing I think is, this is good with Ephemerate, because I love Ephemerate, and this is good with Ephemerate.
Good with Ephemerate.
This is cracked with Displacer Kitten.
Yeah, Displacer Kitten's great. I'm thinking just Turbo Breach. Just do everything you can to mill your library very quickly, eventually find Breach in your graveyard, and then use this to bring the Breach back, and then go through your Unworld Breach combo. That's where I'm leaning with it right now with the deck list. Lots of Grinding Station stuff and ways to get Grinding Station out early, and just like hope that I can do Grinding Station and find Breach on the way. I think this card's neat. I think it does something really cool. Its only issue is that it's only on enters. So once you get the thing, you have to either reflicker it or use it as like a that's the win condition. Do you know what I mean? Like you don't get more value after that, but I think the card is definitely super cool.
I like that you cast the copy then too, so that with like a Displacer Kitten, you get to just like blink Shiko and then get another thing back from your graveyard and just like create this loop where everything that costs 3 or less in your graveyard, you just get into play then.
Yeah, with Displacer Kitten and one spell, basically you bring all of your stuff that Shiko can get back into play over and over and over again, which just might be pretty cool. If you're going turbo, like trying to fill my graveyard, like in my list right now, I have Faithless Lootings and Careful Studies as ways to just fill the yard up. I think it could be cool.
That being said, I think it still just gets a 2.5 because we see this a lot with Jeskai Commanders where they have a hard time giving us the value that we want to see in a CEDH commander. And they all try to play like these combo roles, or they all try to get something out of the graveyard for some reason. Why do they do that?
Yeah, 2.5 for me is kind of where I'll give this. I think the effect is going to be powerful, but I don't think it'll see top table play or anything like that. It seems like this set, we got a lot more cards for the 99, and by a lot more, I mean like 4 really good ones and a bunch of solid options than we did actual commanders.
Well, I'll give it a 2.6 because I'm the villain now.
That sounds good. The last card we're going to talk about then is Felothar, Dawn of the Abzan. This is a white, blue, and a green for a 3-3 legendary creature, human warrior with trample. And whenever Felothar enters or attacks, you may sacrifice a non-land permanent, and when you do, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control.
This sacks a Hulk. This sacks Protean Hulk. That's what it does.
Protean Hulk, yeah.
Abzan decks do this a lot. They have a bunch of ways to do this. This is another one. I like that it's on enter and attack, where I think Thalia and Gitrog is only on attack.
Yeah, and I like that Thalia and the Gitrog is more mana than Felothar, so at least like we get a bit of a cheaper commander to use now.
A little bit less powerful overall. Doesn't have the same effect on the board as Thalia and Gitrog does.
Yeah, but it doesn't draw cards.
It does allow you to kind of pump up your own board and, you know, have a backup plan of like attacking for some damage to clear out some stuff. This is another like probably 2.5 for me. It does something that CDH decks can do in an interesting way.
The 1/1 counter is not necessarily great, but I'm going to say this is a 2.5 until that one game that you make your Esper Sentinel like a 5/5, and then it's way crazy.
And it's also like, I wonder if there's probably stuff you can do with like Academy Rector and things like that, though, with sacrifice to go get an enchantment or stuff like that. There's probably other things like a Mind Slicer. This might be a Mind Slicer deck.
That's funny,
right?
Yeah.
Like if you like,
dude,
yeah.
You are a freak.
Dude, any deck that can possibly play Mind Slicer is great. So yeah, stuff like that. I'd be interested in some more things like that, getting that recurring value. And the +1/+1 counters, I don't know that there's a persist thing that this deck would reliably be able to pull off, but anytime I see a +1/+1 counter, I think about -1/-1 counter. So thinking about persist a little bit, I'm not sure.
I'll call this a 2.4.
I have a 2.5 for that as me.
That sounds right.
For that as me as well.
Should we talk about the top five?
So our top five is Will of the Jeskai coming in at 3.5, Stadium Headliner coming in at 3.9, Nature's Rhythm coming in at 4.65, Mistrise Village coming in at 4.83 repeating, and then Voice of Victory got a 5 out of 5, our first 5 out of 5 that we've had in a little while,
wow,
I think.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really excited for Tarkir Dragonstorm to come out. I think it's going to be a blast. I think the limited environment looks really fun and cool, too. I don't know how much I'll draft for this set, but if I do, I think it's going to be fun. Also, really quick, another big shout out to Wizards for giving us these cards ahead of time so that we could get you this podcast a little bit early.
Thank you so much for watching.
If you want to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Ellie the Magic Guy, David Newman, Pat Fire, Spank Wrangler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roy, Zorbay Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groompy, Gecko 21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Scare Bear Garrett, Luke Cook, Joshua Day, Demon of Rosgrease, Peter Stewart, Corner Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Go to 9, Kawaja A. Hamid, Lauren Kynel, Scott Hawk, and Baby G Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on social media for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
Deadbeat Scott, Fageed, Lil Sad Loner, Ghost Stories, Sarcastic, Roy Turner, Bill Bob, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Justin, Man Solo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Best dragon impression. Ready? 3, 2, 1, go.
Wait, aren't they birds?
Donkey.
Don't swear.
Don't swear. What sort of game show have you seen that has swearing?
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild. Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.